episode 7 of Virtually Relevant.
I'm Eric.
I'm Josh.
This is Kevin.
And I'm William. It's finally 2020, you know, the year of hindsight and crystal clear VR headsets, right? That's the whole 2020 vision. So now we get perfect view in our headsets, awesome resolution, and no blurriness, no god rays. It's just 2020 vision in those VR headsets, right, guys?
Well, if only.
I wish. But it's, hey, we've come a long way in the past 10 years.
We're really certainly getting there.
Yeah. I mean, 2010 was the year of the duct tape prototype for the Oculus Rift. And I mean, if you go from there to the Quest with, you know, inside out tracking and, you know, complete standalone, no tether, you know, all these things, it's impressive how far we've come in 10 years. Felt like a long time from the inside, but looking back, it was actually a very quick move from effectively nothing in the consumer market to, you know, something that's starting to see some mass market uptake.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of my view of it too, is like in the last decade, and really if you want to count like the consumer launch in 2016, less than half of that decade,
right,
has really been the push of like the consumer release of VR.
So, and I think
it's astounding what we've seen in the last 5 years.
And I do think that when people look back and, you know, start putting VR in context, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, I suspect the release of the Quest is going to be kind of the baseline for consumer adoption. Because, I mean, there was strong niche adoption among early adopters and techie type people. But the Quest is the first time I've really seen people who are not kind of part of the VR converted. I mean, I had friends from my kids' school that got them for Christmas, and they're selling them as fast as they can make them. They were back ordered for into March initially, although I think they did manage to get some more production up and going.
Well, that's good at least. So before we jump into our topic tonight, just some catching up to do, I guess, on the latest VR news since our last episode and since the last meetup. One of the things that happened in the last couple of days was Oculus officially removed the Go from the Oculus for Business platform. So it's kind of telling sort of their grand scheme of things that, you know, Walmart and several other companies bought these, you know, thousands of headsets. And then our understanding or our perception of it was, oh, well, they built this platform really for those companies. And now they've abandoned the headset that those companies purchased. So it's a curious move, not a shocking one in my opinion, because I think the Quest has a much more broad appeal, makes a lot more sense given its actual use.
If I had to speculate, I would think that maybe what kind of tipped them in the direction of slotting the Quest into the Go spot in corporate training and so on is that the hand tracking on the Quest, although it's, you know, has narrow support right now, is actually pretty good. And so for training purposes and so on, where the advantage of the Go would be that you didn't have the hand trackers to deal with, or you only had one, now you could ditch that entirely. So I think the Quest will certainly have a lot of uses for corporate training and things like that in that mode.
I like to throw out that, talking from a perspective of someone who talks to these decision makers pretty often, it's that, you know, you get in a conversation a lot with these guys that say, well, I need it to do this and it needs to be capable of these things. And when the shortcomings outweigh what they're trying to accommodate, then they tend to say, well, we'll just take a beat and we'll wait. And I don't know if I'd say the Go is an abandonment, more maybe just a realization that the Quest is the evolution of things. And as they're producing them, they're not producing them as fast as they can sell them, then maybe they're getting to the scale of the market to the point where it just makes sense to edge it out and make it a Quest only line.
And we've seen some other hints that they're kind of starting to shift their perspective. I mean, they've added Oculus Go emulation to the Quest so that library doesn't get completely abandoned. And they're doing a across the board price cut on the Go, which feels like maybe it's getting kind of pushed into the background a little bit.
So one of the things that I was thinking about is, like, you know, from a business perspective, Walmart had, what, 10,000 headsets or something like that? So is there a, do we think there's an Oculus buyback program that they did for them? Or,
I don't know.
I mean, 10,000 headsets to the tune of $300, well, for the business edition, $500 a piece.
Right.
Well, and, you know, and that, did they buy them?
That's a rough deal.
Did they buy them under the business edition?
No. I'm sure there was a special deal going on.
I would assume that they cut a special deal.
The official word or scuttlebutt, I guess, is that there's not a buyback and there's not an upgrade. So if you bought a Quest outside of the business program, then it is not upgradable to a business Quest.
That is really unfortunate as someone who's working for a company that has bought, I think, 30 Quests, not under the business license. We're not loving the pricing on the business license either. It really does seem aimed at, you know, big companies like Exxon and Walmart that don't mind. Small companies that might want 10 or 20 or 25 to do something, that $1,000 a headset just stings.
I mean, you do get a fair amount more than just a regular off-the-shelf Quest with service, warranty, and things like that. And being able to control the devices at a granular level, fleet-wide controls, there's a lot to be said for the efficacy of that in a business product lifecycle.
I get that, and especially if you have a large number of them to maintain, the ability to push updates to all of them or install software on all of them as a batch is valuable. Honestly, if you got a dozen or two dozen units, it's not that huge a deal to manage them individually. The one feature that is, you know, the one I desperately want for our applications is the ability to launch directly into an application when you put the headset on. So you're not having to tell people, okay, do you see that laser pointer pointed at the app that's labeled such and such? Click on that.
Right.
But I mean, in paying literally double, more than double for the device, for the ability to, you know, skip that step, just as really useful as that step is, it's just a hard sell.
So as I understand it, the Oculus for Business was more reactive than proactive. I think people were already solving some of these hurdles individually, and so they wanted to standardize it. So I think if you have a couple dozen or 30 or 40 headsets on your own, you could probably find either something that you can make yourself or someone else's source code that allows you to do some of the basic options from the business line that you would need individually.
I mean, given that that's happening at an OS level, I assume you'd have to jailbreak the sucker, wouldn't you, in order to bypass launching into the Oculus Home environment?
Probably.
Which is something that does not get talked about very openly. I know it does happen, because, I mean, for example, there's all sorts of stuff that's locked down that you can't get to. You can't get to the pass-through cameras or the room geometry, things like that. And, I mean, you can jailbreak it and get access to that raw hardware, but it's not something that I like you doing at all. So you're really at risk of getting it turned into a brick. So I think most developers and certainly most end users are very, very wary of going that direction.
Yeah, for sure. So in other Oculus news, the Link cable is officially out, has been launched, and is shipping. It shipped late, right, Eric? You got one.
I got one. I ordered it within minutes of it going live. It shipped probably about a week and a half to 2 weeks later than they intended, which meant if you ordered it early in the life cycle, early in the ordering process, before they fessed up to the new ship date, they gave you a $20 rebate. But that's a $20 rebate off of a $79 cable. It's even at $59, that's an expensive cable. Given that they were pitching it as, hey, this has got, you know, like, you know, a fiber optic component, it's thin, it's light, I was expecting something somewhat different from what I got. I will give it this.
Unicorn hair and dragon's heart.
It must be at those price points. I've been using it as my daily driver for a while for development work, and it is not thin and light. It is bulky and heavy. I have any number of cables that are 10 feet long that are much lighter and less obtrusive. If you need that extra 5 feet, this is the only cable that's going to get it to you unless you play some games with extenders and so on, which people are doing with some success, but it's kind of hit or miss. There's things I like about it. It's got the 90-degree angle on the connector. I mean, it's a good cable. It's just, especially because this was all sort of, they went for the whole link concept late in the game. It was discussed early in the design process. There was an internal debate on whether they would make the headsets optionally tetherable, and they decided against at the time, which informed a lot of design decisions. For example, that plug is on the very outer edge of the headset, meaning you get absolute maximum lever action on the weight of the cable coming off of it. It would have felt, yeah, you know, half the weight if they'd put it, you know, back close to your temple, and they didn't. So it's just a little unfortunate that they changed their position on that after the fact. That said, I mean, Link is working reasonably well, and this is a 15-foot cable, and I have definitely used it for room scale VR, and it works fine. It's just less comfortable. Now, there's things you can do to offset that. I mean, there's a battery that just got shipped to VR Power that acts as a counterbalance in the back, and I got to, at the most recent meetup, try that Franken mod for adapting a deluxe audio strap to the Quest. That almost entirely solved the front heavy aspect of it, and I'm betting that with that, the Link cable would be much less obtrusive.
There was an amazing mod at CES for that with a battery pack on the back. It was gloriously balanced.
I've pre-ordered that one. It's supposed to arrive on the 30th. I'll definitely let you know, but I'm hopeful.
So, Eric, did you notice a performance difference over with the Link cable over, say, an off-the-shelf USB-C cable that you know that was 10 feet?
No. I mean, the performance seemed identical. Really, all this buys you is an extra 5 feet. And if you need that, okay, and you're willing to spend $79, then it will solve that. What I am hoping is that other manufacturers will say, $79, that's insane. I will build one, and while I'm at it, we'll maybe make it
cough, lighter. Mono price, cough, cough. Come
on. Yeah, well, no, very
I
much
mean, I will say one of the team members at Oculus Connect 6 did say they don't want to be making this cable. The only reason they are making this cable is because no one else had that cable. So they were like, we want other manufacturers to start making this cable. The spec is out there. It's not something new. It's not something that, you know, is unavailable. It's just they don't want to make it. They want other people to come along and make it, and make it better and cheaper. At least that's the view of the team member who I was talking with at OC6.
I remember them saying that. And this is actually a pretty clever way to do it. I mean, you release a dramatically overpriced version, prove that people are buying it anyway, and then other manufacturers will say, hey, hang on, I can do that. So
right. So we should see probably some reasonably priced 15-foot cable. Likely from Monoprice, like Josh said. Speaking of CES,
yes,
there was those contact lenses that
holy
are
smokes,
very interesting. Eric, you knew quite a bit about them
sure,
at the meetup. And then Josh, did you get a chance to, were you at CES this year?
I sure was.
Did you get to peek through them?
See them up close?
No, not the contact lenses. No, that's I did some other stuff though, like the X-Tall.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that you'll have, well, we'll talk about the Panasonic goggles later. I'm hoping you at least got to try those. But I'll be honest, I thought we were a lot further away from AR contact lenses than it looks like we maybe are. It seems like Mojo Visuals actually has a working prototype with a fairly stunning pixel density. It's interesting because the way they're doing it is they've got induction coils on the contacts so that they can actually be powered, have power fed to them externally. They said they will eventually have a small battery in them, which is a little terrifying when you're strapping it to your eyeball.
Yeah.
Or even just induction power. Like, I'm going to cook your eyeball with these contacts.
There you go.
Given the recent phones exploding in the last couple of years.
Right.
When you say, we're going to put a battery on your eye, I'm not really keen to jump right into that one.
Yeah. If anybody's old enough to remember the old Max Headroom TV show, the word blipverts comes to mind. But
but it's going to the FDA, right? Like, so they're going to do serious, thorough testing.
That's kind of a pro. Yeah, it's kind of a pro. I mean, it's a con as far as getting wide market adoption, but contact lenses are medical devices, which means it has to go through FDA approval, which is going to increase the time to market. It's going to increase the cost. It's going to limit it so that you have to get it through an optometrist. But it does mean it should be safe. they will actually have tested it.
There are costume contact lenses.
That's true.
I don't know that those. That's go a good question.
They do not. You can just go to a website and just buy them.
That is an interesting point.
I was
going
to say, I don't know about that. I mean, surely for prescription models, you would, but
that's
I don't think that they would go through any actual FDA procedure, given that they're not, you know, if they're not actually providing an optometry.
Chris?
Whatever.
If they're help not your eyeballs.
Prescriptions? Yeah, if they're not prescriptions, I'd imagine.
But I think because it's a device that is becomes a part of your body in some way and it has electronic components, that it has to do FDA approval. And they're not some fly-by-night company either. They've had this patent, I think, for 10 years. They've been working on these kind of concepts for a long time.
They may be going through FDA approval because their first application for it is to help people with limited sight. What they want to do is pair it up with a camera and then do edge detection and then overlay highlighted edges, bright edges, so that people can see door frames, they can see tables, they can see chairs, which is frankly a phenomenal application for them. But obviously that definitely requires FDA approval. If you're angling for that market, you can probably charge quite a very high price for each pair of contacts, whereas consumer market adoption is going to have to be. So maybe they're aiming for medical device at high price first, and then they'll angle down towards the consumer
market. Get your insurance to subsidize the cost. And honestly, if I'm a company that's going to put induction-charged device on your eye, I'm going to want something that's like, the FDA said it's safe. Please buy it now.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely feel more calm about it. Here is two things that are creepy about them at the moment. They're both certainly, well, at least one of them is definitely solvable. The other one hopefully is. I will say that they look creepy as hell. They have these very painted on irises. Someone wearing them, you would know there was something very, very strange about their eyes. I say they just chrome them up and go all cyberpunk, but... The other
RGB LEDs on there.
Oh man, yeah, actually
UV reactive
images. That would be
amazing.
But the other thing that's creepy, and it's certainly an easy fix, but did not occur to me until someone pointed it out, is by default currently when you close your eyes, you still see the image. You can't close your eyes to block it out, which I think I would freak out in fairly short order
Clockwork
because you
orange.
Can't escape the. Yeah, it's like having the tongs prying your eyelids open. And now, really, all you got to do is put a photodiode on them and have them turn off the display whenever you blink. But but right now, the idea that
still weird.
I'm overwhelmed and I'm closing my eyes and I still see things is that's creepy. So, but
yeah,
either way, I mean,
also,
that's
interesting.
Cool tech.
Interesting to note. These are they're contacts. They're displays.
Yes.
They don't have any kind of tracking built into them, right?
No.
So they are really only a display. Which,
correct.
Which
they're supposed
something
to
keep in mind.
Right. They're supposed to pair with a smartphone or a computer or what have you. They will have some sort of an external device with an external camera that's, you know, feeding stuff into it. You know, obviously you can't stack a ton of tech onto something you're sticking on the front of your eyeballs. So.
Exactly.
But there's no reason that there couldn't be some kind of microphone built in or an IMU.
That's a very tiny IMU, but certainly no reason. There's no reason it's not possible. I was just to be clear about what we're talking about. Obviously, the Mojo Visuals prototypes or contacts did not have any form of tracking built into the lenses themselves.
Right.
So speaking of that, the Panasonic goggles. It's a good segue into that.
Did you get to try those, Josh?
Nope, that's another thing. I tried to get to it, but could not find the time to get through all of the masses. Because holy cow, CES is one monster of an event.
Okay, one of the really cool items that we saw announced at CES, and this isn't a consumer product; these were prototypes, but you know, fairly impressive prototypes. Panasonic had some VR goggles. And when I say goggles, I kind of mean goggles. They didn't look like the box strapped to a face the way a traditional headset does. And that's really their selling feature.
Yeah, they're very steampunk.
They are very steampunk. I mean, they look like those little miniature welding goggles that just go, it's, you know, like thick sunglasses that go straight back to your eye. It's they're neat looking. People who've tried them said that the field of view is pretty good, which is the traditional complaint. See, I mean, these obviously are using micro displays. You can't get that form factor with a traditional LCD. And the problem with micro displays is you typically have to stack a whole bunch of pancake lenses or a bunch of optics to widen the field of view out. And that's challenging to get the field of view out far enough. But they said it was an acceptable field of view. It was a really good form factor. The negatives were it's front heavy. And if you lean forward, they fall off your face. So those are the two downsides, both of which are potentially solvable. But I'm loving the form factor. And I think that sort of the social friction of strapping a box to your face goes way down when it just looks like kind of a thick pair of glasses. So.
Yeah, I think if they just move the battery to the arms of the glasses, like go over your ears and kind of loop them around your ears, I think they could solve the balancing problem pretty easily.
It seems solvable. But it was very impressive tech demonstration. I think people were excited. This has made people excited about micro displays as a viable path forward for VR headsets.
So did I read correctly in my passing? I didn't read up too much on it before we got together, but those are 3 DOF, right? Not 6 DOF?
Yes, I believe they're currently 3 DOF. There's no particular reason you couldn't go 6 DOF with them with proper tracking, but...
Right, yeah. But just the prototypes...
The prototypes were 3 DOF, yeah.
3 degrees. So, okay. Yeah, just an interesting note I saw. But, all right. So, Josh, you mentioned the XTAL headset earlier.
Yeah, so it was one of the headsets I did get to try. Great bunch of guys, very passionate about their project. So it the headset I tried, I believe that the one that I tried is maybe a newer version that they're coming out with.
Okay.
And it's supposed to have 8K, which we all know is really two 4K panels.
yes.
A la Pimax.
The standard that, exaggeration.
Right. And they also have a fixed higher resolution fovea. So the center of your field of view is a higher resolution, kind of like what the Vario strives to do, right?
Right.
The difference with the XTAL is that it has, much like the Pimax, it has a wide field of view, right? The problem that they were hitting at the demonstration there was the hardware that's out on the market is not really capable of driving such high specifications, right? Trying to push two 4K panels plus two micro displays plus hand tracking and all these other things that you're trying to do as heavy lifting on cards that are really being pushed to their limits without all that other stuff, right?
Right.
So the demonstration that I did with them was a flight simulator, which was really cool. It was a lot of fun to do barrel rolls and be kicked around in a motion platform in this huge field of view headset, right? It was interesting because the headset, the case kind of looked like it was 3D printed. So it must have been a prototype unit of a new model coming out.
Right.
Yeah, I by completely random coincidence, talked to those people this morning. They're out of Prague, Czechoslovakia, and yeah, they have a new model that's coming out that I think is what you're describing. One thing I'm very curious about, because I have a Pimax 5K Plus, and I am not necessarily a fan of some of the specific trade-offs that were made, particularly with the optics to get the wide field of view, because I got a lot of distortion around the edges. What did the optics look like on the one you tried?
So it's hard to describe some of those fine-grained details because part of the experience was kind of overridden by the motion of the platform. And then the other part was that the experience was very low poly because, again, the hardware wasn't capable of driving it at such a high rate. So I'm not sure that I got enough of a demonstration to be able to really give authoritative response on that. I'd have to get a headset in my hands and drive some, you know, ray trace demos, even though they're not hitting frame rate, so I can really do some edge case testing with it.
Gotcha. Oh, well. Hopefully we'll get to see them at upcoming trade shows and so on. Maybe once the Ampere GPUs come out, they'll have something capable of driving them at a reasonable frame rate, and we'll get a better look at their potential.
And that really seemed like the reading between the lines when we were talking to them, is that, you know, they kept saying, you know, the hardware right now is not capable of pushing it. The hardware that we have currently is not getting frame rate to where we're comfortable putting you in an experience and showcasing our hardware yet.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like, but Ampere might, hint, hint. So, I mean, the early leaks on Ampere are looking very promising. I mean, I think they're saying 50% increase in capability simultaneously with a 50% reduction in heat production, which would be stunningly helpful, if correct. Yeah. That's all. Take it with a grain of salt. Those
yeah,
leaks,
but yeah, that's a big if.
Yeah,
but they've also mentioned that, you know, it could be for something very specific.
Right. And ray tracing.
One of the things that was touted was they have VRSS, their. That's what could be the possible 50% extra performance.
Gotcha.
At half the power.
Yeah, but it seems like it's got to have some sort of caveat to it. I mean, you almost never get those kind of jumps these days. So
yeah, most of the people, though, that I talked to at CS really seemed kind of, and I don't know, surprised or excited about the potential of VRSS. It didn't seem like something that NVIDIA was really spreading around and getting people involved in until they were ready to really for it to go live.
Yeah. Kind of a little surprise one. Kevin, you were talking a little bit about HTC's lip tracking module. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this one even snuck up on me. Apparently, it was mentioned at GDC last year, so almost a year ago. And even that, you know, for all of us, it kind of flew under the radar. But I follow someone that goes by the name of Fruxis on YouTube, and people most likely know him if they've ever tried out a DK2, who is the creator of Sightline the Chair. He also has his own little system that he's been working on basically ever since then, called Neos VR, which is a little bit like VR chat with the in-game game engine. So it's all about kind of making your own stuff inside of Neos VR, using tools in Neos VR. But anyway, apparently he got
like
a
Facebook
model.
Horizons to me.
Oh right.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Facebook Horizons as well.
I mean, I'm sure his has been going on for longer. I was just saying, yeah, like that sounds like what they're going for.
Yeah, pretty much. But so apparently it just popped up into my feed, checking out stuff. I guess he got one of these developer kits. And as of right now, that's pretty much where they're at with these, is it's purely meant for a developer. It's not really consumer type stuff yet. They're just getting it out there. It's looking very, very good, though. These attach to Vive Pros or Vive Pro Eyes. Apparently, they do not attach to regular old Vives. But
which makes sense. They just discontinued production and sale of the Vives.
Yeah, true.
The original.
But so with this, you can do, say, things like record yourself, even though you look even more ridiculous with this thing on your headset, because it's literally pretty much just a camera that hangs down off of the headset. But to me, it actually looks a little bit better than the Facebook prototype.
Yes,
that elephant it's trunk. Like a giant screen hanging off the bottom of a headset. This is basically, it looks pretty much like a webcam hanging off the bottom of it. But as he was, as Fruxus was showing off this stuff, he's also kind of given off hints that it can be programmed in such a way that, you know, by you making these faces, then it can also control the other parts of the rigged model, you know. So if say you give kind of a frown or something, you know, it'll control the eyebrows to make it a little bit more angry, or if you kind of have a surprise kind of mouth, then, you know, the eyebrows can raise up. He also showed how it was actually looking at his cheeks as well. So he kind of sucks in his cheeks and puffs them out. But so a lot of really good potential for, you know, possibly doing this as recordings for lessons and kind of as a motion capture system. So I think that's where it's mainly looking at right now, is of course the high end, really just tinker right now. But
I'd imagine that using a Vive Pro Eye that has the eye tracking with the cameras inside the HMD, you'd be able to get some data about like what your eyebrows are doing and the tops of your cheeks are doing that kind of sit inside of that area where your eyes are. And you can interpret that data along with the low-hanging camera. But please, for the love of Pete, can someone, that one of you hacker makers out there that are listening to this, take a Stormtrooper headset, take all the guts out of all this stuff, put it in a Stormtrooper headset so it looks a little cooler while we're doing all these like throwing gadgets on our face. I want the smell of vision. I want the lip tracking. I want everything in a Stormtrooper headset. Please and thank
There's
you.
There's a reason they haven't done that, Josh, and the problem is that your accuracy tanks when
you do that. Playing first-person like, shooters.
Your Space Pirate Trainer score is just going to disappear. You know, it's just, you just, as soon as you do that, you just won't be able to hit anything inside of any VR simulation.
You know, you got a point.
I would beg to differ.
So didn't we see something like this, the lip tracking, like a demo at Oculus Connect that from Abrash's department of like some of the stuff that they're working on and kind of the Black Ops stuff.
Yeah, they showed a demo similarly. They were doing lower half of the face tracking. I don't think they were doing any in the headset eye tracking, but they were doing lower half of the face tracking, and they showed two images. One of a person captured like real time, and then another of a reconstructed avatar using that data, and it was almost impossible to tell the two apart. So this isn't necessarily new. It is like Kevin mentioned, this is from last year's GDC. This isn't entirely a new concept. It is really something that is maturing and we may see coming down the pipeline in the next few years.
Well, and with so, HTC losing a little bit of market share, like, I mean, if you look at the Steam statistics, the Cosmos is getting less use on Steam than the Rift DK1 over the last year. So, you know, I would really love to see HTC focus on like making better trackers and better accessories and high-end components that really push the edges and boundaries of what the mainstream VR is capable of doing for consumers writ large.
So we've talked a lot about what's going on right now. So before we get too much into our hopes and dreams for the next decade, just seems like it we'd be amiss if we didn't give a kind of wrap up of what happened in the last 10 years. So obviously we had the launch of the Oculus Rift, the HTC Vive, the, you know, countless other headsets, the Pimax headset, the Index, the numerous mobile headsets, the Go, all of the Gear VR models, the Lenovo headset, the Windows MR line that came and went in the last 2 years, 3 years. So there's just tons
of
headsets
still exists. That came out. Okay.
It still exists technically.
Daydream, right?
Daydream came and went. You know, that's one of those things. So yeah, obviously the Google Daydream headset.
Huawei itself. VR. Okay.
Wait.
OSVR, Vario. There's been a lot of variety.
All of these. Yeah. So I mean, we saw this the birth of modern consumer VR in the last decade, and that's something that's kind of crazy, given the fact that, you know, other than Palmer Luckey's duct taped headset at a GDC, or sorry, it was an E3, I think. There was nothing. There was these crappy things that you might get to do at Dave and Buster's if they had one there, or these, you know, multi-$1,000 headset rigs that were in, you know, research labs. And now we have, you know, portable headsets that we can take with us everywhere in a backpack. So
yeah, it's an amazing point that we've reached, especially when you go back. I mean, people who were, you know, using the DK1s back in the day, or even, you know, before that, using the early prototypes. It's astonishing, and we're seeing some really amazing hardware coming out, both on the high end, things like the Index and the Vive Pro Eye. Starting to see, you know, hints of higher res screens, eye tracking, off the ear headphones. Love the off the ear headphones on the Index.
Right.
And then on the other side, seeing, you know, things going standalone very effectively, far more effectively with inside out position tracking than was conceivable. I will say this: if when they had launched the DK1 back at the Oculus Kickstarter, if you had told me that VR was going to become a platform for strapping as many cameras as you could possibly find facing both inside and outside, that wouldn't have made any sense to me at all. But I mean, that's the direction we're trending very heavily in, and it's interesting to see how the reality reshapes the form of these things as we try to reach the original vision.
It was definitely a decade of the prototypes, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, this all felt sort of prehistory until we kind of hit this year. This year really did feel like the beginning of consumer VR anyway. So
it's interesting, you know, we make comparisons a lot to the video game, you know, console generation of, like, you know, when it comes to proliferation of the headsets and things like that. And one of the things that I find kind of interesting is, you know, by the time the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis really, like, hit public, you know, zeitgeist, Atari, who really paved the way, was all but gone.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting correlation here, because Oculus, you know, all of the founders, with the exception of Abrash, and I guess not necessarily founders, but the core team.
The original team, yeah.
Yeah, the original core Oculus team have all left, either by choice or other means. And so now it's a question of, I just find an interesting parallel there. You know, that's not to say that Oculus is out of the game, obviously.
Absolutely not.
But that team, that core team, is now gone. And so we're seeing, almost with the change of a new decade, this new era for Oculus, and in turn, this new era for VR. Like, what is going to be the future of VR and AR, to some extent, in this new decade? You know, let's just speak of AR. I mean, we got two consumer augmented reality headsets in the last 3 years. We've got the Microsoft HoloLens, and then the HoloLens 2, which is launched, I believe. And then we've got the Magic Leap 1. Those are, you know, our true-ish augmented reality. I mean, we've got, obviously they're still big bulky things, but we've got AR headsets now. That's something that, you know, we wouldn't really have thought of.
Those are the mainstream ones, right? I mean, you've got
Nvidia. Yeah, I mean, there's the
Daiquiri. Lenovo
had an option. Lenovo had some stuff. Epson glasses. I mean, there are absolutely other ones that either qualify in terms of specs, or you know, they do some things but not the others. Those are obviously the mainstream ones that check all the boxes for a quote-unquote AR headset. Right.
Rest in peace, Google Glass.
Yeah, right, well, obviously. That I mean, was more of like a heads-up display. But
second one, the enterprise version. Similarly, like the Views has one that's sort of AR, but not quite. And there are several makers out there trying to solve that problem. And I think we're still early days on that.
I feel like we're 4 or 5 years behind VR and the AR front. So, I mean, I do think we will see, you know, a truly consumer ready one hit the market here in a few years. And I think if they can hit the form factor and the battery life and the functionality that they need to, that it will be bigger than the smartphone. It'll be absolutely huge. But those are all difficult problems to solve, and they have to solve those on top of all the same problems VR has to solve. So it's, but at least VR is solving some of the problems for them.
So long as we're quantifying it as a standalone device, because I really think smartphones have been doing a lot of augmented reality when you consider things like Snapchat.
I'm augmenting
your reality. I mean, it depends on what you consider, like how much of your reality needs to be augmented before you classify it as technically a device that's doing it.
I honestly feel like it's got to be wearable and it's got to overlay the stuff you're seeing in real time. I fully grasp that I set the bar higher for AR than most people do. I don't think pointing your phone at it really qualifies. I think it is building the building blocks that are needed for AR, absolutely. But until I'm looking at the world and interacting with the world the way I normally would be, and it's overlaying things in an aware way, not just in a Google Glass way where it's, you know, popping a display up that isn't aware of the geometry of the world around you. But I get that that's a high bar. But I mean, I was also one of the people who's kind of like, you know, Google Cardboard isn't real VR, you know?
I'm a self-proclaimed AR snob, and I'm right there with you, Eric. But like, for me, it has to be, you know, it has to augment my reality entirely. It has to be immersive. Right. Pokemon Go and a lot of these other AR style apps out there, Snapchat and others, perfectly fine. They're great. They're building blocks that are getting us there. And I think we'll get there, and that's great. And these things are honestly good toes being dipped in the water for the mainstream. You know, when you say, oh, it's like Snapchat, but you wear it, then everyone's gonna be like, oh, all right, cool. I got it. No problem.
Right.
That sounds awesome. You know, that's sold. That no problem. And I think we're getting leaned that direction.
So I will say for I'm
that snobby range
sneaking in at the end of the decade, I will say Vario's XR1 is probably the best, example of what a real mixed reality headset could do, right? Having your entire field of view being augmented to any degree that you want to control.
I'm a huge fan of high quality pass-through AR, because I think it will allow us to start actually building the applications that we'll be using when we go untethered. I don't think it's going to revolutionize society until it's untethered and it goes with you as you go through your day as you normally would. But huge, huge props for Vario crossing that line. Everything I've heard about the XR1 is extremely positive. And I think for certain specific uses, it will be entirely sufficient. And for prototyping the types of apps that we're going to be using when we do take AR, wearable AR, out into the real world, it's going to be phenomenal.
And we'll have some more hands-on reviews for that probably at the end of next month for you guys. We'll have one locally to tinker with and have fun with.
Awesome. So we've talked a little bit about going forward and our hopes and our predictions. So let's jump right in. I mean, we're obviously quite a bit into the episode at this point, but let's jump right in now to our hopes. Like, what do we think the challenges are? What do we think? What do we hope to get out of the next 10 years in VR and AR to that degree, to the same degree? What do we think we're going to see? What are we excited for? Kevin, why don't you start? What are you most excited for in the next decade in the VR AR space?
So really for me, I'm really into all the peripherals that actually people are trying to make, like locomotion, things that attach to your controllers to mimic, you know, how objects may feel in the real world. You know, there's so much actual extra stuff that is being discovered and pushed for, like, really just because of this reemergence of VR. Yeah. So those are the things that I'm really looking forward to as well.
So you're a peripheral junkie then. Like, you're the kid who had the giant backpack that added everything onto your original Game Boy from the 80s that made it like four times the size of the original handset, and it made it entirely impossible to actually use, but it had like 14 things you could snap onto it. Like, is that kind of what you see for the future of our VR?
You know, at least kind of in the beginning, yeah, you know, until we come out with, you know, where something like everyone has a, you know, single solution where everything is built in, you know,
yeah.
The Axon suit version 20 or the,
yeah.
I mean, Tesla suit, you know, version 20 or the Axon VR, you know, full on system, yeah, that's swinging you around inside of your room. You know, something like that. You know, so, you know, at that point, I think that would kind of take care of everything. But until then, you know, we got things like the Void, you know, yeah, to kind of try and fill that space. Also, fix, you know, well, and also with like hot and cold, mm-hmm, kind of, you know, sensation, of course. You know, going down to not just haptic gloves, but the little pneumatic systems in the fingertips to kind of give the illusion.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that's what I'm really excited for in the of the future of VR, because that, you know, The way I kind of feel with it right now is with headsets, even on the DK2, at least for me, what I found is if people remember the Tuscan Villa, yeah, scene in the DK2 and DK1, you know, just kind of running around in that scene, after you give it a little bit of time, your brain just kind of fills in, you know, the missing information, and you go from these barrels that look like stop signs, you know, they're eight-sided, you know, circles, into all of a sudden it actually feels like you could reach out and touch them. And if you just don't like sit there and stare at it, your brain just kind of fills it in, and it thinks that it's this perfectly round barrel, you know, like it should be. So and it's kind of odd considering I'm actually pretty much like more of a graphic snob, yeah, when it comes to computer games, but
well, I mean, if it's gonna, you know, be rendering, so, it flat, you really, it should look lifelike. That's, I mean, that's kind of the situation. But I mean, so it brings up a good point, right? So resolution, field of view, these are things that we talk about all the time. Of like, and it's for a lot of the industry and consumers, it's the bar by which we measure VR success. Like, okay, how, you know, how big's that field of view? What's the resolution? 8K, 8K headsets with micro displays built into them. Like, you know, obviously resolution plays some role in VR's success or acceptance. I don't know that I believe it's as much of like the number one thing. Field of view, I think, is debatably important. I've never really had that big of a problem with the 92/120 that we've got on current headsets, just because when you're playing, you kind of get this tunnel vision, or at least I do, and the edges just kind of melt away. But I know there are some people who that's just an absolute deal breaker for them. It screws them up. They feel like they're looking through a paper towel roll or something. Like, it's the worst thing You know, like there are people who like I'm sure there are several people who can't watch, you know, DVDs or Blu-rays on letterbox mode because the black bars just ruins everything for them. And I feel like maybe that's the same situation, as you can't lose yourself in the experience enough to ignore the things that annoy you about it. So
what are you most excited about? What's like your
feature, I guess?
Yeah.
Personally, I'm most excited about eye tracking. Because it's such a, when I first did something that had eye tracking, which I did Toby's demo at SVVR like 3 years ago now.
Good one.
And it was such a good demo because it was this little magic rock demo, and they're like, look at the thing you want to hit and throw this rock and it will hit it. And as long as you accurately kind of throw it there, it's going to hit it. And they do one with and one without eye tracking, and it's so much more accurate. But then before they even put you in there, they do this little mirror demo, and that was the one that like sold me on it. And they have
it's you look so eerie.
Yeah, it's like they have you look in this mirror with no eye tracking enabled, and your avatar is just kind of stares blankly forward. And at this point, we've already been using VR for a few years. You know, I'd been involved in the VR community since about 2014, 2015. And so I was like, you know, used to turning my head to look, but we don't do that. You know, you look around with your eyes, you move your head a little bit, but mostly you look around with your eyes. And so seeing your avatar just kind of stare blankly forward and moving your head around is something that we all kind of got used to, and that's fine. But once you turn and look at the other mirror and you see your eyes moving where you do, you realize that you can wink, you can blink, and all of that is reflected in your avatar. It just adds a whole nother level of presence. It adds a whole nother level of presence to the experience. You really feel embodied in the avatar that you're using, even if you can't directly see it. And when you're talking to somebody socially, you know, there are tricks you can do, like, you know, look who, you know, whatever direction I'm pointing at, follow that person's, you know, lock onto that person's eyes and move the eyes of my avatar. You know, there are things you can do because most likely you're going to be looking at somebody into their eyes when you're talking to them. But, you know, true eye tracking is one of those game changers for me, just for the social applications and what it's going to do for foveated rendering. And that's brings it back to that resolution. I like the idea of foveated rendering. I'm happy that it will allow us to get more out of current hardware and do more in the future. But the social aspects of it are just amazing to me, because when I can feel like I'm actually sitting across from a friend who lives across the world and we can have a conversation like we were exactly here, and we've done this with the four of us before, like in big screen, it feels like you're sitting around a table. And the more levels that you add to that of realism, the better for me.
That's a very good one.
It definitely feels like there's a convergence point that's coming, and it really feels like it's going to happen in this next decade, where you have the evolution of displays that are giving, you know, 240 hertz refresh rates with 1 millisecond, or even some are talking about less than a millisecond response time. The miniaturization of 8K displays, putting that all together into a headset that it doesn't feel like it's melting your face off, in conjunction with the capability of doing foveated rendering, in conjunction with all these technologies that are being developed and released either now or in the very near future, we're going to see, I feel like we're going to see like this drop off where you're going to be able to bring in a whole new clarity of content, where we're going to be able to jump from low poly to not just, you know, somewhat low poly, but into some more higher echelons of clarity. That really helps, like what you're talking about, Will, is that sense of presence, right? Being able to stop telling yourself consciously that it's a digital experience and really start to tap into the human psyche and the capabilities that we have when we really embody an experience that's immersive. So having things like what Kevin was talking about with the peripherals coupled together with the evolution of the headset hardware, bringing your entire body into an experience where everything is met with a high fidelity. Like, imagine what the Haptex gloves are going to be like at the end of the decade, or the Dexmo gloves that are kind of an analog, or Tesla suit had a prototype at CES of gloves like the Dexmo gloves that they're going to be building into the Tesla suit model, right? Bringing all parts of the human senses, sights, touch, smells, everything into one complete experience. We're going to really see some wild things happen in this next decade. I am absolutely certain of it.
I think Josh is really spot on with the fact that these things all feed back into each other, and the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. You know, each of these things, you know, increased visual clarity and increased social presence through eye and facial tracking and body tracking, and you know, maybe increased haptics, all these different things. Individually, they're definitely cool, but I think when you put them all together and they're all working effectively together, I mean, the hope is that you really feel like you are in that environment, and you really feel like the people that you're interacting with are there. I'm definitely with Will in that probably the greatest point of excitement for me is reaching the point where it really feels like you're sharing a space with someone who's not local. Once you've got eye tracking and facial tracking and body tracking, where you can see and read their body language, see their facial expressions, see that they're making eye contact, I think tremendous number of both business and personal things become very possible with that I think make VR a very compelling thing. The thing I have said for years and years and years is there are parts of the world that don't have indoor plumbing that have high speed cellular service, because human connection, communication is so fundamental that is worth doing, even if you skip over some other things on the way. So I think that's going to be huge. I do think that visual clarity is going to increase without question, radically over the next decade, as it has in the past. And I mean, we saw some things even at CES that were pointing in that direction. I mean, with the Panasonic goggles using microdisplays, there were microdisplay manufacturers that were doing demoing these super high brightness microdisplays, which is important because with microdisplays, you got to feed them through basically a lot of pancake lenses where you're bouncing the light back and forth, and you lose half the light for each layer you do that in. Standard headset gets maybe 3,000 nits on the high end. They had ones that were demoing 3 million nits, which means you can really bounce back and forth a lot of times, and you could take a micro display and widen it out to an extremely wide field of view at very high resolution. As far as visual clarity, I think what we have right now is decent. It's acceptable for most people. The big bar for me is when text becomes readable at like book length, when I'm able to pick up a book or look at a computer screen in VR and read it just as comfortably as I do in real life. And I think that enables a lot of use cases. But social is definitely my giant want on the list. And I do think we're going to see that. The next decade is going to cover basically almost two generations. We should see, you know, one generation solidly and just the beginnings of a second generation beyond that. So the potential to jump forward greatly in the next 10 years is very, very high. And I think we're going to see some things that just blow people's minds.
So it seems like most of these things kind of fall into a couple of categories, and one being, to very broad strokes, put these into buckets. One being the eyes, you know, what can we do to, you know, show the eyes the most clear, amazing image we can. And then the rest is, how do we connect the body to that image?
Right.
And so it becomes, you know, obviously eye tracking is connecting, you know, your visuals to, you know, showing others what you see and vice versa. Then you get into, like, you know, the ergonomics of headsets. You know, we've got these sort of big ski goggles on right now. Are we going to see something smaller like the Panasonic headsets? Are we going to see something similar, but maybe a little slimmer, like the Facebook Labs prototype render that they showed us that was very, you know, getting to that slim visor look.
That was the Half Dome 3.
Yeah. Half Dome 3, or yeah. So I mean, we're getting into ergonomics. That's obviously making it more comfortable for the wearer. Facial body tracking, you know, bringing your body into it, actually letting you further inhabit it. Haptics is another area, like Josh had mentioned, the Tesla suit, being able to actually feel what you're doing, both on the active and passive sides, being able to feel the things that you're touching, but also being able to feel the things that touch you and vice versa.
Resistive forces, right?
Right.
You know, like exactly. Pulling back on your fingers. And you know,
exactly.
Another thing I really wanted to throw out that I'm super excited about is the perfection of the Infinidec and locomotion.
Right.
That is going to be so freaking cool when it like just works like magic.
That's what I'm hoping for sure. Yeah.
No, that's certainly one of the big things. That's been an unfortunate compromise and an unfortunate shortcut is, you know, how do you get around room scale tracking, especially when most people have a very small area to walk around? And the answer has been teleportation, which is extremely handy and also completely takes you out of the sense of presence of actually being there.
Right.
I love walking simulators. I loved like Firewatch or Dear Esther. I really, really, really want to be able to just walk endlessly and explore things in VR.
Just Google Earth. Just be able to
Be able to walk in
tour, virtual tourism. I mean,
yeah, I'd love to be able to walk around, you know, Vienna or Venice or what have you.
Even places you've been. Like being able to. One of the things that was interesting I remember seeing was the idea of taking a lot of the Google Street View stuff and being able to roll that back. So being able to say, oh, you know, this is cool, but this isn't really what I remember. And being able to roll back a decade and see, you know, the early days of Google Street View where, yeah, the images weren't too great, but you can walk the streets of your neighborhood when you were, you know, 10 years younger. Or, you know, you can go see your grandparents' house before somebody else took it over and painted it or whatever. You know,
I think that could be very powerful.
Those things are very interesting.
I can't wait to play Flight Simulator 2020 with a full flight deck in a Vario headset. That is going to be so much fun, man. Going flying in any airport or any place on the planet, all satellite mapped, that's going to be epic.
So, I mean, obviously we're a ways away from really good locomotion. Hopefully within this decade, yes. But in the meantime, the sort of solution there is location-based VR. What sort of things do you guys think we're going to see in the location-based VR sector over the next 10 years? Because that is something that they currently have up on home-based VRs, right? Like we did the zero latency experience during our December social this year, or this past year, I should say. And it was fantastic. And it's a big open area where you can go and like five friends, I think it was six players max. It was eight. Can get together and, you know, play in the same shared space and the same shared experience with all of this room where you can walk around. And that's just not something you're going to get at home. So how do you guys think that that's going to change over the next 10 years? Are we going to see some like innovations in the home tech that's going to phase that out? Or do we think that they'll always kind of have that step ahead?
Well, I suspect that, you know, because you can, you know, buy expensive equipment and you can have things that are at a scale that aren't, you know, feasible for home use, that they will, at least for quite a while, be significantly ahead. My biggest hope for location-based is once we get good body tracking, because that's the current drawback right now. I love being able to be in a big space and interact with other people, but there's not accurate body tracking, so they have to work around it by trying to keep people from getting too close and really interacting in each other's personal spaces. Once you've got good body tracking, I think the number of things you can do, you know, picking things up, sharing things, moving around, really working as a team and in close proximity is going to make for some really compelling experiences. And certainly big pieces of hardware like the Infinidec that it's hard to see them miniaturizing down in size and cost and so on within the next decade are entirely feasible in a location-based experience. But really, Josh is the guy that's got his finger on the pulse for that type of thing. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so I definitely see for the foreseeable future, this decade, that LBEs, the location-based entertainment locations, are going to see a lot of success, right? They've been a burgeoning market over the last decade. A lot of business owners have recognized that not everybody has these killer gaming computers to even run the consumer headsets. But like you said, Eric, there's a lot of new tech that's coming out, and location-based entertainment venues are going to be able to tap into a bit of a larger budget in order to be able to monetize that and parcel it out and, you know, try this or experience this. So that's why you have places like The Void and Zero Latency, but also a lot of mom-and-pop shops popping up, yeah, right? And all the way up to family entertainment centers that are the larger, bigger brother of LBEs, like your Dave and Buster's, your Mario Andretti's, etc. So they're all heavily focused on these cutting edge technologies. I think Infinidec is kind of a smart form factor in its current sense, because you're able to have some ability to walk around, to move around, right? Like you can kind of bend down and pick something up. You have an ability to kind of feel like you're free roaming. And if that platform just worked like magic, like I hope it gets to that point, you're going to be able to drop a bunch in a relatively small space and give people a sense of true and utter freedom where they don't feel like they're tethered into anything and they can just do that free roaming experience. You're definitely going to see some body tracking and haptic feedbacks that are built specifically for location-based in the next decade that allow many users to get in and out of them, that are easy to maintain and clean and all those kinds of things. So expect to see a lot more immersion of the full body experience. And like I said earlier, with that convergence of the technology that's happening, you're going to see a lot higher fidelity, right? So these LBEs are going to be able to bring you this really, really high polish kind of experience, because they're going to be running the really expensive equipment that's capable of producing that.
Yeah.
And right. I mean, it makes no sense for me as a consumer to buy a $10,000 headset in my home, but it can be a perfectly valid differentiating feature for, you know, location-based
right
entertainment.
Like, I mean, the best example of this we have right now and is still to date my smoothest and best experience in a location-based VR experience was The Void. They have got load in and load out down to a science.
Yes.
You know, you get in the backpack, the PC with the haptic vest and everything is on like a hook on the wall. You just stand there, you slip it on, zip it up. It's ready to roll. You put the headset on, it flips down, flips up, you know, out of the way. Everything's kind of built into it. And then they've got all the different effects that are built into the stage, so to speak. And that is one that I can honestly say I would be happy to come back to. And yeah. And they do, I mean, they do it right. They bring out new experiences regularly to bring people back. They are the gold standard for me for location-based entertainment, as opposed to like a VR, your standard VR arcade that you might find at any given city. They are doing it right. And they've got license deals with groups. Like right now, I think they've got, so the ones I know they've done is Ghostbusters, Star Wars. I know they did a Wreck-It Ralph one. They have a Jumanji one. They have an Avengers one. So like, these are all big properties that are timely, right, because those movies are coming out or are out and will stay relevant for a while. And I think that's great. You saw similar stuff way back in the day when, you know, various places like, I remember distinctly, it's a weird memory from my childhood, but I remember when Men in Black first came out, there was a partnership that happened with Discovery Zone, which was an amazing place that I loved as a kid. But it was like this laser tag experience where you would go through and you would shoot these aliens in the little room, but it was tied in with the movie release. So like you go, you saw the movie, then you got to go through like the training grounds. And so they're doing it really, really smart. They're doing exactly what they should be doing. And they're still the gold standard for, you know, the process and what they offer and the price point and everything. So like, I can't applaud them enough for what they're doing. They're
just, I really desperately wish that there was a void that was in town here. Because every single one of those that goes by that I miss, I'm sad. Because I really do want to try them all. Everyone I have tried there has been extremely compelling. I would be willing to pony up. I would be willing to keep going back. I would be excited to keep going back if they had it locally. And unfortunately, they don't here. The nearest one is up in Plano, I think. Plano's a bit of a drive for a 15 or 30 minute experience. But
so that brings in a good example. So I guess I know I'm a big gamer. Kevin's a big gamer. Josh is a big gamer. So games like. Content that is obviously a big thing. Obviously there are industry applications that are going to be relevant, but let's talk about games. Like do we think there's going to be like some crazy new innovation over the next decade? Are we going to see variations on the same stuff? Are we already seeing new paradigms? Like what do we think we're going to see in the next few years? I mean, obviously we've seen some stuff come out lately or at least over the last few years of genres of games that didn't really exist. Like who was going to play an escape room game on the PlayStation 3? Like it is, that's not really a genre that existed, but now it's a whole genre for VR. It's the escape room concept without going to an escape room. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. That's a thing that doesn't really makes sense in any other platform. I Expect You to Die is an example of that escape room system. So like there are genres that are being birthed out of this new platform. How do y'all think that that's going to change in the next decade?
So I'm thinking that Half-Life Alyx is going to make some big headway and really kind of shine because the whole thing with VR is being interactive, and with Half-Life Alyx, hopefully it's just over the top interactive, just be able to pick up anything and everything you see, mess with stuff, kind of physics based weight. So I'm really looking forward to Half-Life Alyx in that regard, to really show off kind of what VR is really intended for. As far as content goes in general, something that I've been wanting to see more of is puzzle-based stuff. It's a little weird. To say that, it doesn't seem as big of a thing, kind of like the blockbuster type thing. But again, it goes back to that interactivity. One of the examples that I really like to give is from the game Shadowpoint. There's some really, really clever puzzles that have to do with reflections and using mirrors. And like that just isn't possible in a 2D flat game. The way you interact with the reflections and just, it's really, really cool. And, it kind of puts you really into this mystical and fantasy world. Trying not to give too much away, there's a puzzle where like you don't actually have anything in your hand, but when you're looking in the mirror, you actually it looks like you have an object in the mirror.
Interesting.
And you have to bring it into your real world. So you end up putting your hand through the mirror and a reflection of your hand comes out of the mirror with the object. So then with your free hand, you then now grab the physical object and can use it in the real world.
That's
So like that was amazing to me. And again, you just can't do that in a 2D flat game. So in a way, it's kind of hard to say like what's coming up, because, you know, this allows you to do, VR allows you to do things that were just not, flat out not possible before.
See, there's two very obvious things that I think are going to happen with games. One, you're going to see an evolution of things that are more matured or made more entertaining or more experiential by making it immersive. Like Werewolves Within is a fantastic game to play in VR, and it seems like so much more fun than if you're trying to play it like a flat version on the computer. Then you have the new types of experiences that it's hard to know what you don't know, right? And I think we'll see a lot more types of games and archetypes born the more we embody our full presence, right? The more we bring the entire human condition into an experience, the more we'll come up with these really crazy out of the box ideas and ways new sports will be invented. And I think that's one of the big things that are going to come out of games and an industry in general is VR esports really coming into its own in the next decade, because it brings so much drama. It brings so much visceral experience to even just the viewers of what's happening on a stage of people competing and giving it their all in a VR experience, right? You have a guy literally jumping on the floor and going prone for the shot, running on a motion platform and those kinds of things, rather than just pecking at a keyboard. So while you can see what he's doing in game or she's doing in game, they're also doing that on stage in front of you. And it's a lot more analogous to traditional sports, because you're getting to see the football player giving it their all or what have you. So I really think that from the gaming perspective, we're going to see some huge improvements and a lot of investment and a lot more publicity happening around the VR esports arena.
Yeah. So I don't want to go too deep into it, because I know we talk ad nauseum about it all the time. But obviously there are going to be huge changes and huge advancements in the industrial space for VR and AR. It's going to change training. It's going to change the work that gets done and how it gets done from an AR perspective, certainly. Are there any particular things that you guys think are notable that we haven't already, I think, talked about on this podcast that we really see as a viable, you know, dynamic shift in the next 10 years? I mean, obviously it could be completely different, different world, but something more short term that we think is going to be an interesting shift.
I think we could obviously do a whole deep dive just on this.
Yeah. we could do a whole hour just glossing at the very, very highest levels. I think body tracking is going to be huge and revolutionary for any sort of physical training that's being done, or physical learning, you know, surgery simulation, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that good quality, you know, body presence mixed with mixed reality, being able to bring in real world objects and see real world objects and pass through and ghost people in from other locations. The ABRASH's whole shared office paradigm. And then you see there was a Vario demo that's kind of heading the same direction. It could definitely revolutionize both, you know, training and, you know, safety management, but also just basic office interaction. I think the entire office dynamic could shift if we reach the right level of body presence,
remote pass work, through telecommuting.
Remote work. Yeah, I mean, all these things I think become possible. And Josh is absolutely right. We could do an entire hour talking about.
I'm sure, and we probably will. I mean,
obviously. And I'm sure we will.
Two big things I really want to point out, because I could just talk all day about this, but two big things. One is I think we're going to find that we're going to save more and more lives through poignant training in immersive tech. We're going to be able to keep people safer. And the second thing is that I think that we're going to be able to train people more effectively and in a broader stroke than we were capable in the past, because I think we're hitting a bottleneck in traditional training mechanisms. There's this problem in a lot of industries, and I'm talking a lot of industries, with an aging workforce that they're not replacing fast enough, and there's not capable of training skilled workers for their workforce to replace that aging workforce. And so I think immersive technology is really going to speak to those verticals to enable them to quickly speed up people, because most work related accidents and injuries happen in the first couple of days that someone is put in a new position. Mm-hmm. And putting people in immersive tech to train them has been shown empirically that you reduce those incidents dramatically.
Interesting. So my one thing that I'm sort of excited to see, which is far less virtuous, is I'm interested to see how it changes film creation and editing and production, because we're already starting to see some hints of that with Steven Spielberg using VR in the production of Ready Player One, and a few other films that have started to use it. I think Jon Favreau used it in the production of the Lion King reboot that they did.
Yes.
So, I mean,
we all know the films that you're talking about, Will. Come on.
That's a whole different industry. But it's interesting to see how this tech is getting used in ways that we wouldn't normally think about. You know, being able to peek into this CG world that we end up just seeing the final version of it. And it takes, you know, hundreds of thousands of man hours to do. Like, I mean, case in point, there was the whole Sonic the Hedgehog debacle over the trailer that came out, and they had to redesign Sonic. And, you know, so people spent, you know, tens of thousands of hours redoing the models and everything else for this production. And I can't help but think, okay, well, obviously some focus testing needed to happen, but, you know, how is VR and AR to the same degree going to change the way that we see films being made, especially with more and more CG, you know, being utilized in things. So it's just an exciting time to be alive, really, and an exciting time to see what's going to happen.
So obviously we have a lot of thoughts on where the industry is going, where technology is evolving, and some of our insights may or may not be on point. But we'd be really interested to hear from you guys out there and gals that would like to chime in with your feedback. Where do you see things changing? What are you excited about? Get involved with us. We'd love to hear some feedback. We'd love to hear what your experiences have led you to believe, and what maybe where you've been let down, and where you hope things take an upturn.
Yeah, Abrash doesn't even know what's going on anymore. He's fled out and says, I'm done with making predictions. What I think is going to become true doesn't, and what I don't think is going to come true does.
Hey, the decade is now. The decade is now, okay, guys?
To try and jump in on that. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, Josh, the time is now. Obviously. So, I mean, we got to get one reference to that in every episode
forever and ever. Yeah.
People will, but we are not paid to say that, okay? Obviously. We're, I mean, if somebody wants to pay us to say it.
Yeah, really.
So, anyways, yeah, I mean, I think it's, we all are looking forward to the next decade and what it's going to mean for VR and AR. I mean, I think we've finally pushed past the point of, oh, VR is a fad and it's going to disappear. Hopefully we're past that point. And so now it's just going to be an exciting, you know, decade for this platform and for what we're going to eventually have. So with that being said, I think that kind of wraps it up for our 2020 hopes and dreams. And like Josh said, if you have questions, comments, opinions, you think we're all entirely off base and you want to tell us about it, you can reach out to Houston VR on Twitter, on Facebook. You can check us out at HoustonVR.com. So do get in touch with us. Rate and review us on your podcast app. It helps us. So that's all I've got, guys. Anything else?
If you loved it, give it 5 stars and let us know. If you hated it, give us 5 stars and let us know. It's great.
Exactly. Let us know why each star is the thing you did not like about it. So
yeah, and if you have topics you want us to cover, please reach out and suggest them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I think that's all we have for tonight. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you, everyone.
See you.
Au revoir.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Virtually Relevant. If you liked it, please consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite podcast app. It helps bring us up in the charts and makes it easier for people to find us. If you'd like to support Houston VR and this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/HoustonVR. Until next time, thanks for listening.